Great to be talking football. Great to be talking Big Ten football. And just college football in general. This is one of my favorite times of the year. You got college football. You got NFL starting up soon. We're back and better than ever. And glad to be talking to our buddy Big Ten Ted for another season here on 1600 ESPN. We talked to him during the Big Ten football media days. Got a little appetizer, if you will. And now it's the real thing. Game action starting tomorrow and running through the weekend. Ted, good to have you back on. How you doing, man?
Yeah, it's fantastic to be here. It's fantastic that we're finally at the start of the season. It seemed like a really long off season this year, but we're finally here. Big Ten's got a handful of games coming up tomorrow on Thursday, and of course the longest weekend of the college football calendar. Great slate of games, not only in the Big Ten but around the country. So I'm glad I'm here talking to you. I'm glad football is going to be back this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll start with the Thursday slate. The slate coming up tomorrow. Four games in total. The best one of the night, at least the most intriguing one, is Nebraska taking on Cincinnati. This game is at Arrowhead Stadium. Travis Kelce's been in the news enough this week, Ted. We don't need to get into all of that, but I'm sure he'll be in the news again tomorrow because it's Cincinnati playing at Kansas City against Nebraska. This is an interesting matchup. You don't see a lot of Big Ten, Big 12 matchups. Cincinnati is a team that wouldn't consider them a CFP contender, but I think they do have some talent on that team. And Nebraska, I think we talked about them during Big Ten football media days. It could be their year. It might not be their year. I don't know what to make of Nebraska. We'll see just how it plays out all told. But what's your read on this matchup down at Arrowhead tomorrow night?
Yeah, it's got a very interesting Kansas City flavor. And we've got Minnie Mahomes on the side for Nebraska as well. So there's all sorts of connections for the Chiefs out there. But, yeah, this is a very intriguing matchup because Nebraska, as of late, they've been receiving a lot of press. People are looking at second-year Dylan Raiola, thinking he can make that jump and become maybe start to see that five-star potential that we heard of when he flipped and eventually committed to Nebraska. And then third-year Matt Rhule, right? That's been talked about, of what he's been able to do at Temple, what he's been able to do at Baylor. And then people talk about the schedule. Like, everything seems to be lining up good for Nebraska, but it all starts in this game. Like, they got to go out there and prove it. I mean, there's been some early-season games in the last couple of years where – you know, maybe they haven't come out the strongest. So to be able to kind of set that floor higher and be able to come out with a lot of momentum, I think is going to help them maybe achieve those expectations. Kind of look at this game. Cincinnati's got a potential All-American defensive tackle in the middle. I know they say they still want to run the ball, but I think Nebraska's advantage is on the perimeter. And you look at, there's a lot of transfers in Cincinnati's secondary. With Raiola throwing the ball, you've got Dana Holgorsen, of course, offensive coordinator, and you've got a lot of weapons out there for Nebraska. So I think that's where they hold the advantage. You go to the other side of the ball, former Indiana quarterback Brendan Sorsby is there for the Bearcats. Former Wisconsin running back Tywee Walker is in the backfield. So a little bit of Big Ten flavor there for Cincinnati. But I also think there's an advantage on the perimeter in the secondary this time for Nebraska. That's an extremely experienced group. I mean, you do have some guys to replace in the D-line. You have some guys some shifting around at the linebacker for the Huskers, but secondary doesn't have that problem. Once again, you got a handful of transfers. You lose Cincinnati lost every significant wide receiver that they had last year. So I think that's another advantage. If Nebraska can win this battle significantly out on the perimeter, I think that they're going to have a lot of success. I'm curious to see if Cincinnati is going to be able to pound the rock a little bit with Walker, you know, losing Ty Robinson and Hotmacher, those two great defensive tackles. The substitutes in the middle, they're not as big. So they got to get a little bit of a size deficiency up front for Nebraska. So maybe if Cincinnati can pound the rock a little bit more, maybe that'll give them a better shot. But I look at rosters. I look at kind of how these matchups play out. It seems like Nebraska should win this. They should win this by double digits in Kansas City. But it's week one. There can be a lot of unpredictability.
Huskers favored by 6.5. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're putting money on it, I would take Nebraska to cover. But I could see it. I mean, there is some possibilities where Cincinnati can kind of win that battle in the middle of the field, so to speak. You know, maybe they could keep this one a little bit more low scoring. Maybe they could keep it a little bit closer. I could see that, but I could certainly favor a Nebraska cover in that instance.
Let's fast forward to Saturday, Ted. Some are calling it the game of the year, and we haven't even gone through week one yet. Texas at Ohio State, certainly one of the best games of week one, no doubt. But Number one at number three, big noon kickoff inside the horseshoe. You got Arch Manning, Arch Mania with Texas, and then Julian Sain taking over at Ohio State. What's your angle on Texas and Ohio State this weekend? This, I think, is one of the top games to watch this weekend for sure.
You know, when we talked about unpredictability and uncertainty, this is kind of one where it's like, you know, the talent level is as good as you're going to get in a regular season matchup this season. But, man, there's a lot of new pieces. I mean, you look at Julian Sain at quarterback for Ohio State. You mentioned Arch Manning, of course. Everybody's talking about Arch. And, you know, of course, he came in a couple of games last year when Quinn Ewers was out with an injury, but now he's going on the road in his first game where he's really the guy for Texas. And, you know, and he's losing. I mean, they lose Matthew Golden, who of course is now with the Green Bay Packers. You know, you lose Isaiah Bond, who is another big receiver for them. They got a couple of guys out there, Ryan Wingo being one of them, and I think is a big playmaker. So we'll see if he can really step up. But man, I think the big things that popped out to me was, I think Ohio State has the advantage when it comes to the playmakers, when it comes to the Jeremiah Smiths of the world, Max Clair, the transfer tight end from Purdue, Carnell Tate, guys like that. I think they've got that advantage. But that Texas defense, that is a nasty, nasty defense. I mean, Colin Simmons coming off the edge. I mean, you got Anthony Hill, linebacker, who had over 100 tackles, and I think he has around 8 sacks last season. You know, PFF had this graded as the number 2 defense in the country. They do lose 2 NFL guys on the back end, but they do have an All-American safety coming back as well. So that's, I think, a very interesting matchup because, okay, Ohio State's offensive line, they got 2 new transfers coming in. Can Julian Sain get rid of the ball quickly? Because I think he's going to have to. He's just got to be the point guard. None of these 2 guys, I think, are in a position where it's just like they're just going to take the ball, take over the game, and do their thing like it's the middle of the year or it's late in the year. I mean, both these guys, extremely young in a big environment. So for Julian Sain, just get it to number 4, get it to these playmakers out there, and I think that they could certainly have some success. I look at both these teams, I don't necessarily see either of them being ultra stout in the run game. I mean, Texas loses 4 guys on their offensive line. So Ohio State, I know they lose their entire defensive line. Like, that's all. On that specific matchup, that's a whole bunch of new guys. So I mentioned at the beginning of this, uncertainty, unpredictability. I seem to lean Texas in this one because of that defense. I think Arch maybe is a little bit ahead of Julian Sain right now, but then I kind of look back to Ohio State, look to their side, and I'm like, well, they got the 2 best players on the field. They got Jeremiah Smith and they got Caleb Downs, and those guys can single-handedly take over a game. So this is going to – I'd imagine that this one is going to live up to the hype. I don't see this as a blowout, really, in any form or fashion. So I think it's going to be a fantastic matchup. Can't wait. Can't wait for noon on Saturday.
How much does having 2 new coordinators taken over at Ohio State, how much does that impact not just this game but the season in your mind, Ted?
Well, you know, you look at last year with Chip Kelly as the OC, and, you know, you had 2 great backs, right, Judkins and Henderson. And Chip's really, his background is in creating mismatches in the run game, right, and doing that sort of thing. Now you get Brian Hartline in there, and I think we're going to see maybe like the Ohio State of old, where they're looking to get explosive over the top, create the home run ball. So I think the philosophy, I think Ohio State is just going to look different, and they don't have as good a talent in the backfield as well. But in terms of like how that's going to play out in this game, I think that's I think where the unpredictability, the uncertainty kind of comes in. I mean, this is a Hartline and then Patricia, you know, kind of coming off the background that he was at. I mean, you got to get into the flow of things, you know, and these are guys that are kind of working in a new situation. So there could be a little bit of a learning curve throughout that first half. Well, Steve Sarkisian is really good at creating advantages as well with some mismatches and certain personnel packages. So, yeah, that's that whole Ohio State kind of working every – it's such a unique situation where they lose so much. They got 2 new coordinators, but you look to the – you know, like I said before, you have those 2 studs on either side of the football. So, yeah, it's like I'm really intrigued to see if Ohio State has any hiccups with those 2 new play callers.
Few more minutes with Big Ten Ted here on 1600 ESPN. Let's fast forward to 10 o'clock Central Time. It's not a Pac-12 game. This is Big 12 versus Big 10. Utah at UCLA. It's so weird to talk about this as it's a non-conference game, but in Big Ten context, Ted, it's actually a pretty interesting game, all things considered. When you look at both teams, obviously UCLA getting Nico Iamaliava out of the transfer portal, year two for Deshaun Foster at UCLA. What do you make of this matchup, late night one on Saturday?
Oh boy, this is this one's got an intrigue to get pretty fun. Have some Pac-12 after dark magic a little bit. You know, when Nico transferred in, and then that gets all the press, and that gets all the pub, and it should, right? He's an extremely talented guy, and quarterback is the most position on the field. But they've got they bring in Indiana's former quarterbacks coach as their offensive coordinator, Tino Sinceri. And I think that connection is really good. Tino's got a great track record of developing quarterbacks in the Kurt Cignetti system. So I'm really excited about that. But Utah was kind of ravaged by injuries last year. And, of course, they had that down year. I expect them to take a step up. I mean, Devin Dampier transferring over from New Mexico, he's their quarterback. He's kind of a dual threat guy. So UCLA defensively, they got to be aware of that, right? They got to be aware of both design QB run and not design QB run. Get in outside the pocket and creating plays because he can do that as well. Utah also got a transfer running back that's pretty good. Wayshon Parker from Washington State. Utah's a good team. This is going to be a good test for UCLA. If you kind of look at UCLA, I know they got Penn State at home early in their slate, but they've got the potential to maybe use this win, if they can get the win against Utah, to springboard to a really good opening season start. Now, one thing to keep in mind for the Bruins is their wide receiver core. Okay, so Rico Flores tore his ACL last year. It sounds like he's going to be out at least for, you know, the first little bit of the season. And then you've got guys like Mikey Matthews, who is a transfer wide receiver. He's got an undisclosed injury. Kwasi Gilmer was like their freshman last year, returning guy that was expected to be an impact player. That's another guy where he's got an undisclosed injury. So if this wide receiver group is a little bit more thin, I think that's going to have a big-time impact because that's like that's the whole thing of what UCLA needs to do. UCLA needs to take advantage of a talent like Nico and a decent wide receiver core if they're fully healthy and really unleash that. If they don't have that depth at wide receiver, I think that they could run into a little bit of a trouble here at Utah. But all the there's going to be a lot of eyes for those that are still awake. There's going to be a lot of eyes on Nico in his first game against a pretty good opponent that I think a lot of people are looking at as a Big 12 championship contender. So if UCLA can get this big win right off the bat, you know, maybe they could springboard that to a pretty successful start to the season.
Let's leave the Hawkeye fans and give them what they want here. Yeah. Iowa and Albany. I don't think there's much to talk about with this game. I see the line has been removed from ESPN Bet, but earlier this week, Iowa was favored by 38.5. I honestly cannot remember the last time Iowa was favored by 30-plus in a football game. They were favored by 28 a couple years ago against Western Michigan, but 38-point spread in an Iowa football game is foreign territory here. I think it says a little bit more about Albany than the Hawkeyes, but the game itself, Ted, is what it is. It's an FCS team, a team that's replacing a ton of guys, went 4-8 last year, interim head coach. So I'm not sure there's much to talk about there, but what are you looking for, I guess, in this early season for Iowa, including this game against Albany this Saturday inside Kinnick Stadium?
Well, I think the first thing you got to start off, what do we know about Iowa? Okay. We know Iowa from now until Phil Parker leaves, they're going to be a great defense. You know, I like the defensive line and what they got coming back. Is Xavier Wampa back there at safety? You know, I know they're replacing a couple of really good linebackers, but if you look at the guys that you're replacing them with, they've been in the program for multiple years, right? And, you know, if there's one thing we know, if you have those Iowa linebackers that have kind of been in the system, got a little bit of playing time here and there, they're going to be okay. No, I love the ball. Okay, I hope everybody, I say this a lot to maybe other folks and other fan bases, I hope you have the jokes out of your system. Because I think last year you really started to see, I think them start to turn the corner with Tim Lester as the offensive coordinator. They got a great O-line, one of the best probably O-lines in the conference coming back this season. You've upgraded at quarterback with Gronowski. He's probably the best quarterback since Nate Stanley in 2019. So that's an upgrade. You know, the backs, I think, is going to be maybe a little bit more diverse with the amount of guys that they have back here as opposed to what they had last year with Caleb Johnson. But I'm really focused on these wide receivers. That's going to be, I think, the big thing for them. If Iowa wants to have the best season that they do, they need these wide receivers to be able to step up a little bit more. Jacob Gill coming back, Reese Vanderzee, Sam Phillips. I mean, he's supposed to be the explosive transfer wide receiver that's to be able to make some plays down the field a little bit more. So I think that's what I want to see. You know, I know they're probably going to line up at the line of scrimmage. They're probably going to run the heck out of the football, and that's fine. That's what Iowa does. But it would be nice to kind of see if these wide receivers really show out in this first game and really provide a lot of confidence that this can be a true balanced offense. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. I'm sure in a game like this, obviously, they're not going to get too much away, especially with a big game coming up against Iowa State. So, I would expect them to just, play it pretty conservatively, maybe get this one out of hand in the third quarter or so, and then get ready for the Cyclones.
It's the learn the depth chart game. Hank Brown, yeah. And everybody else that's down 3, 4, 5 on the list might see some playing time if all goes according to plan. All right, Ted, I know you're still doing Big Ten Ted content. You've had some changes to your schedule and your life. I'll let you talk about that if you want to, but just what can folks expect to see from you this year when it comes to Big Ten content with Big Ten Ted?
Yeah, we'll still be doing previews of games. We'll still be talking about the games. When the games conclude, as time continues to go by, opportunities kind of come your way to write for team sites for the On3 and Rivals Network. So, you know, we're still going to be pushing stuff out. We're obviously still going to be coming on here every week to talk about it. But I got two previews up there already, Nebraska and Cincinnati, Texas, Ohio State, hoping to get UCLA and Utah up pretty soon as well. And then we'll talk about it, after the week is over. So looking forward to another great year.
Excellent, Ted. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, okay?
All right. Sounds good.